Nuketown Radioactive for Monday, September 25th, 2006. Well, folks, welcome to Radioactive number 38. It has been too long since my last podcast. I didn't realize quite how long until I went to the website today and was working on some stuff and noticed, hey, wait a minute, the last Radioactive came out, like, in August. If I don't get my act together, there's not going to be a Radioactive out in September. That's not cool. The sound quality on this podcast is probably going to be radically different from what folks are used to, and there's two reasons for that. First of all, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Second of all, I'm using my Mac's internal mic to record this because all of my normal USB microphones work. And although my office is a mere 8 blocks from my house, I'm pretty sure I'd set off a variety of different kinds of alarms trying to go in and get my podcasting gear right now. So, we'll just have to put up with the tittiness and hopefully it doesn't sound that off. So why the heck am I up at 3 a.m. recording this? I don't quite know. I went to bed at like 10 o'clock and I think at about 2:30 I was up and my brain was just kind of on and I just thought, well, you know, I just better get up and do this. And I think it was just like my body and my subconscious kind of conspired to say, hey, you know, you got all this stuff kicking around in your brain. Why don't we just, you know, get up and work on that while everybody's sleeping? And, everybody, if you listen to the last couple of podcasts, I think I talked about this, kind of the whole resisting the temptation to get up in the middle of the night and get all this work done because, you know, you always pay for it. And I'm sure I'll probably pay for it at some point. But, sometimes you just can't resist the siren call of the computer. So, that's why I'm up now. As far as why the podcast hasn't come out, well, you know, it's what everybody's excuse is, right? Time. Real life. It all just comes crashing down on you. And in my case, if you've been watching the site, then you know what the deal is. But to reiterate for everybody else, I've been painting. I've been painting a lot. Every weekend since Labor Day, including Labor Day, I've been painting my house. And basically, we're remodeling the downstairs, and we're painting the foyer and the living room and the library, and it's an awesome project, and everything looks great, but oh my god, there's just a never-ending amount of paint that needs to be put on the walls. So, it doesn't leave you with a heck of a lot of energy come weekend's end after you've spent Saturday and Sunday, you know, scraping, spackling, painting, and all that great stuff. So, it's coming along. This weekend I got the paint up in the foyer. We have some trim work that needs to be done tonight. And then, well, I think Sue's going to do that today. And then we have one last wall, but it's a big wall in the foyer that actually goes up the stairs, which we're still trying to figure out the color on. The other rooms are gold. This wall probably end up being some shade of blue, I think. That's what I'm personally leaning towards, but we haven't officially decided yet. The upside to this is that I'm pretty caught up on podcasts. I blew through a whole bunch earlier in the month, and I found it's funny, you know, when you go and you check your podcast aggregator and all of a sudden you see, oh my god, I got another 10 podcasts, and a whole bunch showed up this weekend. But while I was caught up, I listened to Stephen King's The Shining, which was I first read this book probably in middle school, so maybe like 7th grade, something like that, maybe 6th grade, I don't remember. And then I think I might have read it again one more time in high school, but it's been years and years since I read this book, and it was fascinating to go back and, listen to this book, read this book, and as with the perspective of, you know, a 30-something who's got two kids, and, you know, previously maybe you related a little bit more towards Danny, the little kid who's the little psychic kid in the book. Whose dreams foretell all sorts of disaster. But as an adult, you know, you start to relate a little bit more to Jack, who's Danny's kind of, well, I don't want to give too much away for those who haven't seen or read The Shining, but let's just say that Jack has some issues that unfortunately get worked out in very horrifying ways. But, you know, you can kind of relate to Jack, his temper, his obsession with fixing the Overlook, those kinds of things. So It was really surreal. I mean, there was one weekend, I think probably, I think it was 2 weeks ago. I was up at like, well, I was up at 2 o'clock in the morning painting because I was hell bent on getting as much painting done as possible. And, I'm sitting there and I'm listening to The Shining, and it was, I gotta admit, I had a bit of a creep out mode. I've read a lot of Stephen King. I generally don't get scared by Stephen King. I've had the one or two oddball nightmares about, like, I think It was the one that got me, my brain working the most, and a little bit in The Stand. But The Shining is one of those classic books, because I was really, really into ghost stories when I was a kid. And, there was one moment while I was painting, and I paused and I went downstairs to wash all my brushes out, and I'm washing my brushes in the sink, and not realizing that I was using a lot of hot water to do it, and all of a sudden the hot water heater kicks in, and it's like 2:30 in the morning. You've been listening to ghost stories for the last 3 hours, and I jumped. It was kind of one of those kind of surreal moments where I'm like, yeah, you know what, maybe it's time to not paint that one last wall and just, head off to bed before I, just totally freak myself out and don't get, I won't be able to go to sleep at all tonight, right? Now, in addition to the painting, I do have some geeky improvements that have been going on around the house. With the living room and library finished, I got the stereo and the TV hooked up again, and finally got to hook up my AirPort Express so that I can stream music from my Macs to the stereo, which is very, very cool. Basically, you take a you can the AirPort Express wireless thingamajobber. they can act as a wireless hub, but if you have two of them, you can create an extended network. And what you can do if they also have audio out jacks, so you can take an audio jack or an audio cable, stick it into the AirPort Express, then run it into your stereo, and then stream music from your Mac to the stereo, basically because your Mac sees this kind of remote speaker. And it was pretty cool. Jordan really liked it. The other night, I was doing this, and I was listening to a Rush compilation, and Tom Sawyer and Xanadu and a couple of other songs are playing, and Jordan is just dancing like crazy. She's running around in circles, and she's stopping to take a little drink of water, and then she's running again. She's doing like these kind of like quasi Vogue type dances. I mean, it was hilarious to see her going with this, but mission accomplished there. I mean, I think one of the things, I don't know, I mean, maybe it's just the way my geek brain works, but since I've gotten the AirPort Express up and running, I've found that at night I've been spending more time, just kind of listening to the radio or listening to my music. I think it's probably because, digging out a CD seems like such a pain in the butt because it's, they're usually buried away, and the way our house is torn up right now, you can't easily get to them. And, I don't necessarily want to listen through an album. I just want to listen to kind of like a random playlist or, a couple different songs. So, doing it through iTunes and the Mac just kind of works a little bit better. But net-net, we were kind of hung out downstairs, listened to some music instead of watching TV, and I think that was probably an improvement overall for everybody. Now, on the site front, and there's going to be a lot of news here, guys, so, bear with me. There will actually be original content later on in the show as I do a couple of site reviews and talk about George R. R. Martin's A Feast for Crows, but just bear with me. There's a couple more. There's a little bit more, housekeeping stuff we need to get out of the way. Anyway, the Radiations newsletter. I had this on the old version of the site. I've had it for years. There's something like 400 subscribers to it, and it was one of those summer projects that didn't get done during the summer. So, the last couple of days, I've been messing around with alternatives to what I had been using to run the newsletter, and I found a module for Drupal, which is what the content management system that runs Nuketown, and it looks like it's pretty promising. It looks like it'll do everything that I want it to do. So, just experimenting with it right now, making sure that it works, figuring out how people will unsubscribe from it, and then I'm going to import the old list, and hopefully this will be a good way to get the newsletter up and running again. I know a lot of websites have kind of gotten away from the newsletter thing, particularly with the rise of RSS, and while I can appreciate that, I know that there's some people who just, not a lot of people use RSS, but a lot of people do still subscribe to newsletters, even with all the spam and all the other, stuff that's out there. So I do want to get this up and running soon. Now, on a freelancing note, my review of Horror Clicks, the new miniatures game from WizKids. Yeah, bear with me, guys. The Mountain Dew's still kind of kicking in. Yes, I have insomnia, and I drink Mountain Dew. Can you tell? anyway, my review of this miniatures game is up on sci-fi.com. There'll be a link to it in the show notes. Pretty good game. I liked it. I mean, it certainly captures the horror genre perfectly, but you know, the problem that I run into and the problem that my friends and I have really run into is that we only have time for maybe one or two miniatures games. And our big miniatures game is already HeroClix. We actually have so much HeroClix that, you know, we could use what we have and, you know, never buy another bit of HeroClix and still not be able to play all the armies that we could could possibly build. And our other miniatures game, also by WizKids, is their Pirates game, which it's gone under a couple different names. It started off as Pirates of the Spanish Main. So here comes another miniatures game, Horror Clicks. And, you know, I can see how it would be appealing. I mean, it's a pretty gruesome game. I don't think anyone under 17 should be playing this unsupervised. And even then, you know, parents, you should check this out before your kids are buying it or you buy it for your kids. But, you know, we just don't have the time for it. So, you know, I gave it like an A-. I think it's got a solid mechanic. It was fun to play. But as far as whether or not it'll be, you know, become a fixture in my gaming library, the answer is unfortunately no, because I don't have enough time to play the games I have, guys. So, and it wasn't, while it was good, it wasn't good enough to knock off HeroClix as the number one sort of miniatures game of choice with my group. Now, one last thing, which I just kind of found astounding, just kind of knocked me for a loop earlier this month, was my high school reunion. Yeah, the Mount Olive High School Class of 1990 reunion. It's coming up on my 20th reunion. And that just kind of boggles my mind. Now, fortunately, it's a couple years off. They're getting organized, and they're showing a fair degree of advanced planning here, because my reunion isn't until 2010. But, man... Even so, even knowing that that's 4 years off, 20 years out of high school, that's just freaking astounding, you know? It's just, wow. You know, I can remember being in eighth grade and watching the movie 2010 and thinking how far off into the future it is, and, you know, it turns out, wow, it's only 4 years away. And damn it, we haven't sent people to Jupiter yet. So I don't know, I didn't go to the last reunion in 2000 for a variety of reasons, but, you know, I don't know. I might go this time. I think it'll be somewhat, you know, probably be largely dependent on how many of my old high school friends will be going. I pretty much see everybody I wanted to see from high school, but, you know, having said that, there's some people that I haven't seen in years that it would be nice to get back in touch with, and I guess it comes down to the same thing that it always comes down to for geeks, which is... You know, I was just a big nerd in high school. High school wasn't really a heck of a lot of fun for me, and that was probably the main reason why I didn't want to go back in 2000. Was just, you know, I just wasn't that into high school, so the idea of going to a reunion just didn't seem that compelling. Yet, at, you know, going on 35, I don't know, there's an appeal that wasn't there 10 years ago, so... We'll see how it goes. They've got a blog set up. I'm just kind of like checking to see who's checked in, and you know, I don't know, guys. Can you tell that I'm a little bit ambivalent about it?
Hi there, friend. Welcome to the Dragon's Landing Inn. Come in from the cold and warm yourself by the fire.
Wow, thanks a lot. It's downright cold out there.
If you're looking for something to eat, we've got a feast of ideas and advice for tabletop RPG players over there.
Uh-huh.
And in the back room, we have interviews with gaming industry insiders.
Right.
And out here in the common room, we have lots of good hearty discussion about all kinds of RPGs and accessories. So, what can I get for you?
One podcast later.
Little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm. No little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm.
Visit the Dragon's Landing podcast at www.dragonslanding.com.
I really like Jonathan Coulton's music. I've played some of it before on the show. And, you know, the thing that his stuff cries out for is really good music videos. And there's a couple of different people who've made an attempt at that. I think one of the best is probably Spiff's World of Warcraft Jonathan Coulton music videos, which use movie captures from World of Warcraft and, you know, scripted movie captures, obviously, and puts them to the music of Jonathan Coulton. So you have music videos for Bone Crusher Mountain and Are Your Brains, which are probably two of the best ones that I've found on the site, although there are a couple of others that are there. And I'd like to thank my friend Lance, otherwise known as Aralar, from the Newtown site. He was the one who actually turned me on to this in the first place, and it's pretty amusing. I mean, if you need to get kind of cheered up while you're at work, there's nothing quite like watching Bone Crusher Mountain. So you can check it out at www.youtube.com/user/spiffworld. Of course, there will be a link in the show notes. Now, moving on to kind of the cool RPG stuff, we have Roundtable Season 3. The focus of this season is world building, which will be culminating with World Building Month in January, an event which encourages people to create their own 50,000-word campaign setting. Now, I really enjoy the Harpy Monkey stuff. They've been putting out some great podcasts. Mick has been just, I'm amazed that he's able to do as much as he's able to do with, you know, the family and everything. Clearly, he's doing a better job of managing it than I am right now. but the season three has just been fascinating. I've listened to the first two shows, and I love the whole idea, the whole process of world building. You know, what goes into it, you know, the laying down of the myths, the laying down of the structures of the society, that sort of thing. And they're getting into all that kind of nitty-gritty. I've never actually built a campaign world from scratch. I've been adventuring in Greyhawk for years and years and years and years. And although I have built up a lot of our own personal campaign history and carved out a significant section of Greyhawk for ourselves, I've never actually sat down and tried to create, you know, like my own pantheon of gods and my own campaign setting. So I've got some ideas kicking around, and I think if I were completely and utterly nuts, I would try and do this world building thing in January. And a part of me really wants to do it. But the other part of me says, man, it took you a month to get out a podcast. How the heck would you ever get out, be able to do everything that you normally do, plus do World Building Month? So, I don't know. I think it's an awesome idea, and I'm certainly enjoying listening to it, and I can't wait to see what the results are from the people who have more time, or at least need less sleep than I do. Last thing I want to talk about is a pretty cool thing that I discovered at work this week, which is portable apps. This is a site, you can find it at portableapps.com, and it features portable flash USB drive-friendly versions of programs like Firefox, FileZilla, which is an FTP program, Audacity, which of course every podcaster is familiar with, OpenOffice, and more. There's like a portable Sudoku game, right? The beauty of this is that, you know, you can have Firefox running on your little USB thumb drive. You can have all of your bookmarks and everything, and you know, it's great to be able to take this kind of stuff with you, because for the most part, I just work in my own office at work. But I'm in a higher education setting. I'm working at a college, so there are computers everywhere. And I think this is probably the same in most corporate environments. But even more so at a college, because you've got computer labs. You know, it's very easy for me to jump out. If I need to check something in Windows, I'll just jump off and jump out of my office, run to one of the labs in the library, and, you know, pull it up in IE or whatever. But there have been times where I'm like, oh, you know, I wish I could edit this real quick. Damn, I don't have an FTP program with me. Or, yeah, you know, I really need my web developer's toolkit right now. This version of Firefox doesn't have it. So, fortunately, you know, you can just throw this stuff on your flash drive and go. And I bring this up because I know a couple of guys in my campaign listen to this. And you guys all have flash drives. And it's awesome to be able to have these little apps sitting on those flash drives. So I wholeheartedly recommend checking it out. It's really, really useful. And finally, I just wanted to say, I need promos. You know, I know we haven't been coming out as frequently as I should, but I've actually burned through most of my promos. Now I'm going to be taking this this plea to the streets, as it were, and checking out, you know, going to my podcasting compatriots and asking them directly for some promos. But if you're listening and you're a podcaster, or, you know, just somebody who's got a promo, let me know, and, email me at nuketown@gmail.com, and I will include it in the show.
You must be listening to the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbn.com. Amazing!
And now, folks, my much-delayed, long-talked-about review of A Feast for Crows by George R. R. Martin. This is a huge book. It is 1,104 pages, published by Spectra, and you know what? You know what's completely nuts? It's 1,100 pages, and this is only half the book. That's right. This is the fourth in George R. R. Martin's Song of Fire and Ice series, and the first three books were fairly sizable. But as Martin was writing this particular book, he discovered that it was getting rather large, and he decided to divide it into two separate books. So the fifth book in the series, A Dance for Dragons, will be released, I think, sometime soon. I'm not exactly sure on what the release date is, but I'm sure if you Google it, you'll find out. So what he did was, rather than kind of do it like the cliffhanger thing, he decided to tell half of the stories of his characters, all the way through, and then kind of wind things up in the other book. And for the most part, I guess it was a fairly successful project. I get a little bit ahead of myself. Anyway, I listened to the unabridged audiobook version of A Feast for Crows throughout June and into early July. And, you know, I listened to the audiobook for a couple of reasons. The biggest one is that this is a huge freaking book that I do not have time to read. So it was a lot easier to listen to it on my iPod and to go to the gym and listen to it there, or to, while I'm walking to work or whatever, than to try and carry this huge freaking book around with me, right? Which is admittedly an excuse. If I wanted to, I could sit down and figure out some way to, you know, carve out time to read this thing, but you know what? I didn't want to, because it's way too freaking big. For those of you who don't know about A Song of Fire and Ice, it's set in a land in which magic was once dark and powerful and has since faded with the growing strength of civilization. The continent of Westeros is united by a single king, but when he dies, civil war erupts. That war raged through the first three books in the series, a Game of Thrones, a Clash of Kings, and a Storm of Swords, with catastrophic and tragic consequences for great and small folk alike. And when I say catastrophic consequences, I mean, you don't, with Martin, you don't get too attached to any particular character, because he could kill them at any given time. He's the most brutal author I've ever read. Really just astounding. Anyway, so this book, I enjoyed it, but here's the thing. Most of the characters in this book weren't the ones that I really cared about. The characters that I really cared about, like Tyrion Lannister, Jon Snow, and Daenerys Targaryen, their arcs were discussed and were talked about to great length in the earlier books, and as particularly their kind of arcs kind of culminated in a Storm of Swords. And they kind of go underground in this book. We don't really hear about them because, like I say, Martin decided to focus on the tales of other characters. And the downside to that is that, you know, these are the characters that I cared most about. So reading this book felt kind of like just kind of biding my time, you know, making do with what we had. I will say that the cool thing, making do with what we have, I will say the cool thing is that you do get little snippets here and there of what's going on with those characters, because there's rumors that the characters that he does focus on here. But it's not the same. So who's he talking about if he's not talking about Tyrion and Jon Snow? Well, the strongest stories in this particular book revolve around the Lannister twins of Jaime and Cersei Lannister. Jaime is Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, and Cersei is the Queen Regent, whose son is, her juvenile son is the king, but he hasn't actually come into his power yet. Now, I don't want to give too much away for people who haven't read the series. If you haven't read the series, you should. It is a long and, I won't say tedious read, but, it's hard work. This isn't the kind of books that you just kind of sit down and say, oh, you know, a little light reading, I'll pick up Martin. No, this is the kind of book you need to allocate some time for and really, you know, kind of focus on. But anyway, I don't want to give too much away, but basically, the major story arcs here are the redemption of Jaime Lannister, who was a despicable, I This is a fairly civil podcast, so I can't describe Jamie in the extreme, but let's just say he wasn't a very nice guy. He was probably, like, just one of the characters that you absolutely hated from the earlier in the series, and the thing that drives me nuts about Martin, but in a good way, is that he really allows you to see characters from a different perspective. And characters that you hated early on, damn it, he figures out a way to come around and make you actually sympathize with these characters. And Jamie would be a classic example of that. You know, the whole book is about his path to redemption and trying to become an honorable man and trying to rediscover what it means to be honorable and living with the choices that he's made. At the same time, we have Circe, who is not on the path to self-enlightenment. Rather, she's on the highway to hell. She is hell-bent on destroying herself. And she does a pretty good job of it in this book. It's a wild arc. And it's fun to read because Circe is one of the despicable characters in the book. And you know what? I don't feel any need to redeem her. And apparently Martin didn't feel the same way. So, you know, it's somewhat satisfying to see her chickens come home to roost, right? This was overall a pretty good book. You know, there's a couple of other characters that, like Sam, who keeps us in touch with Jon Snow. Sam is known as Sam the Slayer. He is a craven, a coward, but he was sent to the Wall, which is this huge fortified ice structure to the far north of Westeros, and because his father thought that he was worthless. And he gets to the Wall and he tells everybody he's a craven, but then he does, you know, heroic things, and he hasn't quite come to terms with the nature of what it means to be brave. And he is sent out into the world to recruit help, and oh, there's a whole lot going on there. But anyway, so it's fascinating to watch Sam's kind of maturation, kind of coming into his own and starting to realize, you know, that he's not completely worthless, and that he does have skills that are of use to himself and the world. Which, you know, to some extent, you know, Sam's kind of the story of the geek, right? You know, coming to terms with yourself, coming to terms with, you know, what your own capabilities are. So, you know, that was a fun arc. Arya, who is one of the last surviving, well, members of a family, whom you'll know more about if you read the books, but anyway, Arya's tale is disturbing. Basically, she's had nothing but tragedy in her life, and every time you think that this poor kid is finally going to be reunited with some of her family members, she gets swept off in unexpected directions, and I'll be really interested to see what happens to Arya when we come around to the fifth book, because I think she's got a major role to play. And, you know, watching her, you're like, is this kid going to come out all right? Because she's on the path to doing some pretty horrifying things. So the big question is, can she hold on to enough of herself to come back from the darkness? And I think to some extent that's kind of the story of A Song of Fire and Ice, is, you know, delving in the darkness and trying to hold on to yourself against the growing nightmare that is. I recommend this book. I think, I mean, obviously you can't read it on its own. You need to read the other books in the series first. It's not my favorite book. I think A Storm of Swords probably may be my favorite, although A Game of Thrones, the first book, was really fantastic as well. And like I say, you know, I did have this sense that just biding time, waiting for the fifth book and the characters that I really care about, but, you know, it wasn't a bad way to pass the time. So that'll about do it for this edition of Radioactive. I've just been joined by my son, Lucas, who at 4:30 in the morning decided that, hey, now's a good time to eat. I wonder if he sensed that I was up. But in any case, next edition of Radioactive should be out a little quicker. I'm hoping to set up a schedule where I can... I want to try and knock one of these out over lunch. I had done that before, and I think I just need to, you know, sit down, make sure I have my show notes together, and just go, so that I can get these things out on a more regular basis, because if I've learned nothing over the summer, it's that Radioactive has a tendency to drive traffic to the site, so, you know, gotta get more shows out in order for that to happen. If you have comments, you can email me at nuketown@gmail.com, and yeah, you hear that? That's Luke. You can email me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can also visit the site at www.nuketown.com. You can Skype me, username's Nuketown. And if you want to keep up to date with what's going on with Nuketown, you can go to the site, log in as a user, then go to your profile, and there's a little tab called Notify. And there's a couple different settings there, but basically, You can set it up so that you can be emailed whenever a new post is on the site or when a new comment is on the site. So I think that's a pretty useful feature. At least I'm finding it to be a useful feature. A couple of other folks have signed up for it, so, you know, check it out. Next time on Radioactive, I will be talking about geek fitness, which, you know, I've had a couple of essays about this up on the website, and people seem interested, so we'll be talking about that. Until next time, enjoy your geek life.